Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Hello and welcome to podcast number 252. My name is Chris Tilley, and this week I am joined by Daniel Krupa.
Hey.
And Gav Murphy.
Hello.
Welcome to podcast Gav, a brand new member of the team.
I'm excited.
Tell us about yourself in 10 seconds.
I'm Welsh, I have a beard, and I now work at IGN, and I'm on this podcast.
You're on lots of podcasts.
Yeah, I do like podcasts. I like a podcast.
You're a podcasting veteran. You've got like podcasting chops.
Yeah.
What podcast are you on?
I'm on a podcast called Regular Features, which is one I started with some friends. Mm-hmm. I used to be on pretty much every game podcast that Future Publishing did, because I used to work for Future Publishing. Mm-hmm. I enjoy guesting on podcasts and just chatting shit.
Well, welcome to the team and welcome
around
to the podcast. This week we have a bit of a Halloween special. We're going to be talking horror, talking about our perfect Halloween night.
I've got some quick fire Halloween questions a reader sent as well, so I'm going to be dropping them on you. I'm not allowed you to prepare. It's better you have authentic answers.
I'm a bit uncomfortable about that.
Did they title it quick fire questions?
Yeah.
Play.
They know how it works. They know we're not going to actually plan anything, so they've sent it in. Cheers, Scott.
Firstly, we're going to talk about something that you've called Marvel Megaton. Why have you called it Marvel Megaton?
Because it has the impact of a nuclear explosion upon the website that is IGN.
It did actually, didn't it? Traffic wise.
Yeah. It's doing well. Your website. Thanks for... Personally, I'd like to thank Marvel and DC for both doing this, ensuring that we'll all have jobs for the foreseeable future.
That is good, yeah.
Yeah, cheers.
They're
cheers,
trading
lads.
Blows, and whoever wins... Whoever loses, we win, basically. That's how it works, isn't
is
it?
Is that Transformers? Is that the tagline for Transformers?
No, Alien versus Predator.
Is it? Whoever wins,
we lose, but whoever loses,
I think everyone in Transformers is a loser.
Not the people that are funding them and making the profits.
Yeah.
So yeah, this was pretty big. It was a bit of a surprise, actually. There was a Marvel event that happened in LA on Tuesday, and I was looking back through the emails. We kind of thought it would be Avengers footage.
We really underestimated what that was.
Yeah.
We thought, because the trailer had leaked the week before, we thought they might have announced Doctor Strange, because going into that event, there was rumours of Benedict Cumberbatch being cast. Obviously, we talk about this at length on this week's Superhero Show.
Yeah, tune into that. That'll be live on Saturday.
Yeah. So we thought it was just going to be quite a small-scale announcement. But new.
It was massive. It was a megaton. So Kevin Feige came out on stage and announced the Phase 3.
I thought that was the announcement then. Yeah. He just came out on stage.
So what that basically amounts to is after Avengers and Ant-Man next summer, we have in 2016, Captain America Civil War, Doctor Strange, Guardians of the Galaxy 2. 2017, Thor Ragnarok, Black Panther.
You're okay.
I'm getting confused. 2018, Avengers Infinity War Part 1, Captain Marvel, Inhumans. 2019, Avengers Infinity War Part 2.
You're getting confused. That's too many.
What about... I didn't expect Thor Fraggle Rock as a crossover. I think that's taking it in an interesting direction.
Which means that 2017, they're upping it to 3 films a year, which by that point, DC will be cracking them out.
Yeah, but also you have to remember, they're not the only people making these movies at an alarming pace.
Yeah.
Also Fox, also Sony. I think the Spider-Man film is probably going to fall by the wayside.
Do you think?
Yeah. I think there's something else in the offing there. Yeah. Like, if you look at that, people have made this many infographics going around. I'm sure IGN will have one shortly. Putting all these films on a timeline, and so you can kind of conceptualize what the next 7 years of your cinema going life is going to look like. And it's just so many, and it's so frequent as well. Yeah. Like, these are event movies, but is it still an event movie when it's a, no. it's quite a regular occurrence movie?
Definitely not. I was looking at the list and I started getting stressed, just as I was telling you. Like, yeah. I was starting to think, like, what am I going to be doing in 2019? Like, and we said, like, you could have a kid right now and it'll be old enough to go see the new Avengers film in 2019. That is scary.
Wow.
And it seems to be quite a new thing as well, casting people in films that won't be made for quite a long time. Yeah. I've not really heard of that happening, and certainly not being announced. Like,
yeah, imagine getting a job you don't have to do for about 5 years.
Yeah. deals are done in private, aren't they?
Yeah.
And then we find out about them a long time later. So maybe like Pierce Brosnan for Bond. I mean, he nearly got the part first time around, but it went to Timothy Dalton because of Remington Steele. But I'm sure there was a little conversation there. Yeah. So he probably knew that he was going to... And I think a lot of... Sometimes actors do know so they can prepare physically for roles far in advance. But to be announcing stuff...
It's mad.
What's the name of the chap, Black Panther chap again?
Chadwick Boseman.
He's got a lot of time to work out. Yeah. He just keep getting bigger and bigger by the time he's just like the size of a house.
He's
like, he's too
now,
big.
Isn't he?
He's 37.
Unless he pops up in... a film before then.
Of course
he's definitely going to appear in Civil War. They said that's how they're going to launch that character.
Might he appear in Age of Ultron?
I'd quite like to be
Ant-Man.
I think if I got one of these roles, I'd be like Cumberbatch, don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
Don't really have to get big, does he? He doesn't have to get work out, really.
Mm. He can't get fat.
You
can't have a fat
What if you couldn't grow like the requisite facial hair? Like, obviously, you know.
Of course,
about growing requisite facial hair.
Maybe that's
because we demanded the beard at IGN.
Yeah, maybe that's why it's going to take so long, because he's got to grow a little ponty little
method. He's going to train to be a surgeon.
But I think maybe the biggest news was the fact they announced the casting of Black Panther. That was certainly the most chatter on Twitter.
It's tangible. It's more tangible. The other stuff is like logos and dates. And obviously, it's weird because prior to this, we knew the dates even. We have like placeholders, and Kevin Feige, you can actually find the actual presentation on YouTube if you look for it. And he's like, yeah, we kind of announced these dates because in Hollywood you've got to say you're taking a date put a flag in the sand, as it were.
Well, that's the thing. They're sort of taking ownership of that kind of thing, like, because these are the kind of stuff that would, you know, really usually be like revealed at Comic-Con or something like that. Yeah. But now they're just going, no, we're just going to do our own stuff.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's almost like spinning out. Yeah. It's almost like a Nintendo Direct thing.
It's like
screw this. We'll do it on our own terms because we're bigger than Comic-Con.
Yeah.
And it's good for their investors as well. I'm sure there's some kind of timing to something behind the scenes.
The share price must go.
Yep. But his casting, I've seen the James Brown movie that he's done, and he's really good in it.
Okay. It's Boseman.
Really like an exciting presence on screen. Yeah. Very physical, very charismatic. I think that's really, really good casting.
I've only seen him in Draft Day, and Draft Day is a terrible, terrible film, but he is good in it.
He's good in it, yeah. He's solid in that one.
Yeah.
He's solid in the Jackie Robinson movie, rather, 42, but yeah, really good. I think he'll be able to hold his own against these guys.
Yeah.
What else jumps out of the page at you about this announcement?
Just a lot of stuff. Yeah. I think smuggling the two new, I don't want to say the word, two new characters, like the kind of the uncertain ones. Mm. I wonder if they've kind of been buoyed by the success of Guardians of the Galaxy and been a bit braver, gone, wow, this like ragtag bunch of weird characters that even comics fans aren't like, you know, they're into, but they're not massively known. All these other characters, are, you know, from the heyday, they're Kirby, they're Joe Simon, they're Stan Lee. They're the big kind of characters that Marvel, the characters that built the House of Marvel.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, doing these Guardians of the Galaxy, I think it kind of made them confident. And now doing Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers' incarnation, and the Inhumans, which is a Stan Lee creation, I should say. But doing them in between the two Avengers films, I think it's like, it's a really smart way of tackling them.
And it's funny, I think pre-Guardians of the Galaxy, we would have been sitting here discussing that some of these are a real chance or could go dodge, as we did about Ant-Man, and we still maybe do a little bit. But because of the success of Guardians and the way they just nailed it, tonally, creatively, I don't feel that fear anymore that these guys just feel... You know, okay.
I do a tiny bit, just because Guardians, like, the stars, okay, aligned for that, I think. And it was just such a fun film. And it was like, you know, they have, it's funny, like the soundtrack is really good. Like, it was just,
but that's the tone that those characters have, yeah.
Whereas, like, Black Panther, you've got to nail that, like, properly. Otherwise, people are going to go insane.
I think that's why it's kind of, they're really good at the slow introduction. And I think probably Batman versus Superman, that's what they're going to do with Wonder Woman. She's going to be established, and then she gets her own film. And bring Black Panther, see him in action when the entire movie's not resting upon his shoulders in Civil War. And then you just hope the audience is really warm to that character.
There's a, I mean, he's got like a, such a huge following online. Like the, when we did the video last week about Black Panther, like, that was just going crazy. People were insane for
him. But at the same time, don't forget, like, he is, he's, a lot of these characters are second tier characters.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to their characters, and, you know, the trick will be turning Black Panther into what Iron Man is today. You know, they don't have Spider-Man, they don't have Wolverine, but if they can make these characters, they can make any character huge. They do it with Guardians. They can do it with any of these.
I kind of trust in these guys. We also, if people have a chance to look at the superhero show, you can see Benedict Cumberbatch's reaction when I asked him what he thought about Doctor Strange and would he ever be interested in playing the character.
This was just a couple of weeks ago, wasn't
it? This
before
was
pre-announcement. Before, like, even... Well, he's not... Yeah, but before even, like, the rumours started last week even... Very coy.
Yeah, it was one of those where I had I had 1 minute left, and I was either going to ask him about Sherlock or Doctor Strange. And I thought, well, if I ask him about Sherlock, I know the, I know I'm going to get an answer and get something I can use. If I ask him about Doctor Strange, I might go down in flames and get nothing and waste a minute. But I took the chance, and I didn't really get much. But now it's much more interesting looking at his. I mean, you can you could tell at the time that he was obviously in talks but couldn't say it. The way he smiled, the way he nervously drank his water and kind of looked at the camera. So yeah, check that out if you want to see.
What do you think of Cumberbatch? You're a big fan. About you, Gav?
I'm a big fan of his. I just think it's really boring casting.
Yeah.
Like I mean, I watched the superhero show that you guys did, and I remember talking to you guys about on Twitter. Like, it was always going to be the Red Viper for me. Like, I just thought that is amazing. He would be so good as it. What's his name?
Pedro Pascal.
Yeah. Like, for me, I was just in my head, he was already Doctor Strange. So,
It's, I guess, one that is just a physical thing. Like, Pedro Pascal is kind of slightly swarthy, and he's got like facial hair. It's easier to like just. He's wearing like weird clothing in Game of Thrones. It's kind of easier to like wrap your head around. Like, even Cumberbatch, I think he's a great actor. I can't quite yet imagine him in that outfit or doing those things. But I think that movie's going to be really weird.
Like, my worry with it is like, and this is a huge problem I have with a lot of Avengers stuff now and again is. It just becomes too smug.
Yeah.
Like, and I think, like, the Avengers, the first Avengers for me, that's just, like, sometimes, like, it's like 10-minute smug off between who can be the most smug out of, like, Iron Man and Thor and Cap. And it's like, I really hope Benedict Cumberbatch doesn't play it like he played Sherlock.
Yeah, I think what they'll do with Strange, I really hope they bring this, like, slightly unlikable character.
Bit of a
bastard right at the beginning. Yeah. And then when he teams up with these characters, you're going to need these characters who cut through all the other characters' nonsense. And he could be that really serious character going, just cutting through all that kind of jokey in jokes between them.
That would be awesome.
Also, that movie's going to have a really distinctive look because Strange in the comics, like Steve Ditko stuff, is like really weird when he's entering other realms. The way that they'll be able to bring that to life using CG and like set design could be really interesting.
And I like Scott Derrickson as well.
And they also said, there's a quote about Kevin Feige said, what they'll explore with Strange is things like at the edge of kind of quantum mechanics, string theory, time travel. Mm. So yes, it's magical, but it's also at the very limits of physics.
Yeah.
So it's kind of still tangible.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Which is cool.
Yeah, well, we could talk about this all day, but we can't actually because we've got stuff to do.
Yeah.
But there's a bunch of videos on the site. Our guys in LA, Jim, Roth, Eric, Joshua, they've all been doing lots of conversation videos. We got the Superhero Show out this weekend, so if you want to hear read or hear any more about this Marvel announcement, look around the site.
I think we've got pretty much every base covered and then probably twice over.
Yeah.
Just in case.
Yeah. And this won't be the end of it as well.
No, we're doing this for the next
and
9 years.
And I guess next week DC will make another announcement.
Yeah.
So what else have we got to talk about this week,
So, because Halloween is upon us today when the podcast comes out, we thought we'd talk about Halloween in general and go around the table and describe our perfect Halloween viewing or entertainment. Who wants to kick off?
Not me, because I need time to think about it.
That's okay. And then we're going to face some quick fire questions from Scott.
I can go first for the Halloween. Okay. Like, because my Halloween, my perfect sort of Halloween night's in, and never, like, I love horror movies, but the stuff that I watch on Halloween are like Halloween episodes
of things,
of TV shows, or like X-Files for me. That's all I watch is like, because that's the stuff that still scares me, no matter how many times I've seen like X-Files Home, which is like the second episode of like season 4.
Is that the incestuous one? Is that the kind of Texas Chainsaw style?
Yeah, and they've got that, I think it's like the Johnny Mathis song, like Wonderful, Wonderful plays in it. Like, every time I hear that song now, that it was on a Bioshock trailer recently, like, I couldn't do anything with that trailer. Like, I had to edit videos. I was like, I can't use that. Like, I'm still absolutely terrified of it. And I've seen it, I don't know I've seen, how many times I've seen the episode, like a million times.
But, so what are the best Halloween episodes in your, like, what your playlist?
Well, Home, definitely. I really like, even though it's a bit rubbish, I really like the Dawson's Creek Scream episode.
I've never seen this.
I remember that being good.
It's the same writer, isn't it? Kevin Williams?
I really, really like that. I mean, Simpsons Halloween stuff. Like, I saw the Simpsons Halloween Shining before I saw The Shining. So that, like, terrified me as a kid. Like, we were having a conversation the other day, like, about how they're just not funny anymore.
They're not even embracing... Like, I always have a massive issue with Halloween because it's been kind of hijacked to be Fancy Dress Day.
Yeah.
And people can get lost with that because I feel like it needs to have some kind of connection to the occult or scary movies. Yeah. Otherwise, what are we doing? You have fancy dress any time of the year. You don't really need an excuse. You know, it's about the thinning of the membrane between the real world and the other world, the dead, and kind of seep through. And I think you need to embrace the supernatural.
Yeah.
So I've written down Frasier on my page. I don't know how to transition from pagan mythology to Frasier. Frasier's had some really good Halloween episodes where he's had like fancy dress parties in his flat. There's a really good Halloween episode where they keep playing pranks on each other which is really good. But Treehouse of Horror, I used to love them as a kid. That was kind of, I love the episode where they reenact Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven.
Oh yeah, that's really, really good.
So good. But I've watched the recent Treehouse of Horror, so I always try and seek them out every year. And they're just like, it's almost that thing where it's been hijacked to just be dress up. So one episode it was like Bart and Lisa in Hogwarts, and it's just like a 7-minute parody of Harry Potter.
That's like a mad, so, it's like a Mad Magazine.
Whereas at the best, they were kind of redoing The Shining with The Simpsons. The Simpsons adapted The Shining.
The Bad Dream House one, which is like kind of like the Amityville Horror. Yeah, like, that is horrible.
Is that the Bad Dream House? Which one's that?
With like the walls are bleeding and stuff like that, into a new house. Like,
which is the one with Pierce Brosnan where he's like Hal as well? There's also one like that where he kind of takes control of the house.
I don't think that's a good
one. I also like the one where Groundskeeper Willie is basically Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, that's a really
Nightmare
good one
on.
As well.
Yeah.
But like some of those, like generally, that they used to have like a little warning on them. Like Marge would come out and be like, look, this is a really, really scary.
It's just
episode,
like Do you ever seen the original Frankenstein, the Universal Pictures Frankenstein with by James Whale? That's how the episode begins. It comes starts with this guy coming out on stage saying, "Brace yourself for what you're about to see."
Yeah,
and I used to love when they ape things like Night Gallery as well, with Bart going around like Rod Serling.
Yeah, that's really, really good.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think like mostly X-Files stuff that I watch basically, because there's just so many just horrible ones, like Tombs and Squeeze. Still terrify me now.
What did he eat? Livers?
Yeah. He ate livers, then went into hibernation for 40 years.
I remember watching that really late. So he used to repeat them really late on BBC One, like at midnight on a Friday. Yeah. I remember watching that the first time when he squeezes out of that vent. Mm. It's terrifying.
My parents bought me a book, and I went on holiday to the south of France, and they bought me all these X-Files books. And I read Tombs before I had watched it. So just sort of in this...
You're always doing things out of step. Like, you don't go to the original. You're always at one remove.
I know, I'm bad. But it was only like this, look, the rubbish little adaptation books. And then I had to like go camping for like... 3 weeks in the middle of like these forests and stuff like that. It was horrible. Like, I don't think I slept the entire time I was there because I was just so afraid, but I still loved it, I think.
What about you, Chris?
Well, that's something I think I'd do is embrace the nightmares. I'd try and eat some food.
Definitely,
that I can't, my system can't digest that well. Because that's like
uncooked chicken.
Yeah. But, you know, lots and lots of cheese very, very late at night and just see what happens.
So basically, on the perfect Halloween night in, you have a cheese board. Is that what we're saying here? Right, cheese. How middle class are you?
That's the thing, I can't really do that anymore. Like, I live on a boat, so outside...
That's scary. I find that scary.
Man, outside the boat, it's just pitch black. So it's just fields and fields and fields, and you can't see anything. So one side, you've got water, and it's pitch black. The other side, you've got fields, and it's pitch black. Like, when I get home, I'm not going back outside. Like, there's been times where I needed to go outside and be like, ask my girlfriend, like, do you mind walking to the shed with me, please? Like, because it's so scary. And we've just had like a little security light thing put in. And last night I was there on my own and it went off at like 3 a.m. Obviously it's like a cat or a fox or something like that. But I mean, I couldn't open the window to have a look because I just thought, if I see someone standing there, like I'll actually kill myself because I don't want to deal with whatever's outside the boat, I don't think. I'm scared for you. I don't know what's going
to happen. I got scared when you told me about how you have to like dispose of your waste.
Oh yeah, that's the fun bit.
The toilet, that's not a scary situation. I know you don't like toilet humour, do you?
No. I don't like toilet humour.
Even though a lot of your stories do revolve around toilets.
It's not my fault.
But that's why I can't eat cheese and stuff anyway, but well.
Okay, well it's good to know.
Because
so
of
not,
the chemical toilet.
Not food, Gav. Cheese. I'm a big fan of 80s horror films, so I'm always trying to fill in the blanks, and I've recently got Netflix, so there's a few on there I haven't seen, so I might watch Chud. I haven't seen. I need to catch up on Chud. There's one on there, Full Moon High. I mean, I've seen all the good ones now, so it's just working my way through the bad ones.
The real rubbish.
But there's something to be said for bad 80s horror.
Yeah, like, Chud, it's always enjoyable.
Yeah. I mean, Chud's, I guess, got a proper cast rather than some
of the
other
Chud?
Ones.
I don't know what Chud is.
It's about cannibals under the in the subways of New York.
What does Chud refer to?
Well, it's got a couple of meanings from the in the movie. I know it's a spoiler. Okay, actually, to say what
just because I think in Stephen King's It, I think they kill it by something called like the Legend of the Ritual of Chud.
Oh, really?
But that's unconnected.
I generally first heard about Chud from The Simpsons. There's like a when they go to New York, he says like after all the stuff that happens to him in New York, and he goes down to thing, he goes, and then the Chuds came at me.
Yeah,
and I never understood what that was.
It's a, the kind of a cult built up around it.
Yeah.
But if I want to take it seriously, I guess my favourite movies are always... my favourite horror films are kind of the sad, kind of tragic ghost stories. So I'd watch some of them. Mm. Maybe The Innocents, Devil's Backbone.
Innocence is so good. I only found out the other day that Truman Capote works on the screenplay.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
bonkers.
Yeah. What else? The Others. The Orphanage.
The Haunting.
Yeah.
The Haunting.
I love The Haunting.
Just, I like horror that makes me sad.
Yeah.
The Orphanage. Did you say The Orphanage just then?
Yeah.
What's that horror?
I watched something really recently that's kind of like that. Have you seen Shrew's Nest?
I know, I've heard about that.
Yeah, because that's, you'll like that. Yeah.
What's that called? It's
like Shrew's Nest, like a Spanish film.
Yeah.
And that's one that makes you sad because it's a really, really sort of heartbreaking story about these two sisters. But it, I mean, it goes mad, and at some point it's actually like quite funny, and it goes a bit farcical. But sad, generally sad.
Or Don't Look Now, which is in that wheelhouse, and that's my favourite horror film.
Yeah,
but yeah, I've still only ever watched that one once.
Mm. Spanish are good at that, aren't they? Spanish and the Mexicans are good at that, like vein of horror.
But I might dress up as well. There's a couple of costume parties on Saturday.
All right.
You dress it up?
Well, we'll get on to costumes in a minute.
Oh, okay.
But I was just going to say... Scott's got a lot in store for you, Chris.
Bloody hell.
So have a think. I was going to say, I don't know, have you seen the... Speaking of It, and it's the Ritual of Chewed, apparently.
Chewed, not Chuds.
Not Chuds.
Good you remembered it, though, even though you remembered it.
I do really like It, and I actually thought of it. I used to really like watching It. I was kind of obsessed with the TV adaptation of It as a kid.
Horrible, yeah.
I just thought it was the most disturbing thing, but I couldn't stop watching it, and I taped it off TV. I used to watch it all the time.
I remember the advert for that freaked me out.
It's just the opening shot, so it's a kid in his back garden. It's so good. It's so twisted. And he's looking at so the day's drawing to an end and it's getting stormy and the wind's picking up and it's blowing the white sheets that are hanging up to dry and one of the sheets flutters up and he's just stood there, you know, this whole thing about keeping the monster back, not showing him, he's just there and he goes hi and the next thing you see is like the tricycle tipped over and the wheel just spinning and then Fur Elise plays and obviously it has problems and the ending is quite notoriously not very good. It's a bit bad and still budget not to support it, but I think it's actually directed by a guy called Tommy Lee Wallace, who did Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. He's also the editor on the original Halloween.
Okay.
And the first part of it, I think, is magnificent. Like, it's some of the best TV because... The first hour and a half, because the way that TV was divided up, every character got one section.
Yeah.
So it's almost portmanteau, but not. Yeah. Like, each one gets their kind of little spooky story, their encounter with it as a kid. It's got a really good nostalgic vibe of them going to, I was a teenage werewolf
That's
in the
perfect,
50s.
Yeah.
It's just got a really good feel to it. Mm. And it's also kind of fantasy horror. It's dark fantasy horror. It's kind of almost like My Lord of the Rings when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like, these kids banding together to fight something that seems insurmountable.
Yeah, exactly.
These, you know, like hobbits. They're the most unlikely of heroes.
Yeah.
So I really like that. Also, Ghostwatch. We've talked enough about Ghostwatch over the years.
Times on here.
What's your favourite Stephen King adaptation?
That's probably right up there, even though I know it's deeply flawed. I'm really looking forward to the new adaptation of it when it comes from the guy who did True Detective.
Oh, awesome.
He's directing it.
Yeah. I really like Christine.
John Carpenter's Christine,
I really, really like that. That used to really scare me as a kid because, like, I watched Jaws and I was afraid to go in the bath. Then, like, I'd watch all these different... I'd watch, like, It and I was afraid of clowns.
Yeah.
Then it was like, I'm afraid to go in a car now. Like,
yeah, it's almost like that Family Guy sketch. So what's next, Stephen? Scary lamp?
Yeah.
Well, obviously The Shining, but it's such a loose adaptation of the source material. Carrie. Carrie's great, like, considering what the subject, the original stuff was.
Yeah. It's pretty... the recent remake.
Yeah, she's great. She's super. Like... Yeah. What about you, Chris? Anyone?
Yeah, The Shining. I can't see much better than The Shining.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely not the Tommy Knockers.
Or... No, not the Tommy Knockers. Not thinner.
The,
so
the Mangler.
Have we got this quickfire?
Yeah, do you want a quickfire?
Because I'm getting nervous now.
Okay, so scariest game in the last 5 years, Gav.
I recently played a PT. Like the demo that they released at Gamescom for, which ended up being like a little teaser for Silent Hills. PT, I think, stands for Playable Teaser. It was like a free demo they just chucked out and were just like, we're not going to tell you anything about that. And then some like clever clogs completed it in exactly the right way. Like, I've played it a bit and I haven't managed to actually do it. Like, if you play in the right way and do things in a certain time, you unlock the actual trailer, which reveals that.
Yeah, I completely fluked it. I completely
fluked
it. Yeah, fluked it. I spent like 2 hours on a Saturday night because you're supposed to plug in a headset, Chris, and say certain things.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant. It's a brilliant kind of marketing ploy. And it's also kind of a weird phenomenon because they thought people would take months to solve it, and then people worked out. But because it's not clear of how you bring about the trailer, it's led to loads of spurious theories of how you do it.
Yeah.
And some people say you've got to have a microphone plugged in.
Yeah.
And I found myself on a Saturday night playing this game, and I'm basically having a seance with my PS4, where I'm just like trying to summon this ghost. And I don't know if that even worked, but it brought about the trailer.
You got it?
Yeah. But just by, I don't really know why I did. I haven't been able to do it again since.
Yeah.
But I actually saw a clip the other day on YouTube of something in PC that I never saw when I played it. So one time you go around in a loop and you look up at the, you know, like near the front door, there's like banisters. You know where there's, one time around, there's a fridge hanging. And it's one time you go around, the fridge isn't there and you can look up at the railings. Did you ever see this?
No.
If you look up the railings one time, there's like this creepy Annabelle figure with like a hollowed out face and bloody eyes just staring down at you.
Does it do anything? It doesn't do anything.
Just there rocking.
I never saw that.
I'll send you the YouTube clip, but that's disturbing.
I played it, like, I had like 8 people around to my boat the other day and we sat and played it. I just showed them it. It's just people just like hadn't played, you know, maybe I hadn't played a game for a couple of years and definitely hadn't played a horror game for a couple of years. And they were just this is horrible. And they were like, literally can't play it. I can't play this.
I still don't think it's got to the point where Silent Hills can't be as good as that. As an experience, because it's just like...
Yeah.
It's also because Chris, you keep going round in a circle through the same corridor and you go to a door at the end of the corridor and it takes you back to the beginning. So it's almost like you're journeying into madness. That's what I feel like when you're repeating it. Like, I think it's Einstein said the definition of insanity is doing the same thing expecting a different result.
Yeah.
And because you keep going round, you keep doing the same things. You're like, I don't know what I'm meant to be doing.
Yeah.
So it's very oblique and weird.
It's horrible though.
Yeah.
That's the scariest game I've played.
What's yours, Dan?
I've put down Slender.
Yeah, Slender's pretty scary.
Because I played it... I don't think it has the longevity and the quality. It's obviously made for next to nothing. Some dudes just made it. But this came out like 2-3 years ago now. And off the back of all my favourite horror games getting turned into something very different, like being turned into action games where you can... Dead Space 3, you can like freeze guys, slow down time, fly.
Yeah.
All this stuff. Have like amazing weapons. This like just gave you a torch and you felt vulnerable for the first time and you can't really do anything to fight the Slender Man when he finds you. But that's the thing, it's putting you in this position of feeling very vulnerable. And I spoke about it on the podcast, like the scariest thing in movies for me was Michael Myers, like just looking at Laurie.
Yeah.
Like from across the road when she's in Shakespeare class or when she's walking down the street and he just pops out of that hedge.
Definitely,
in the middle of the day. That's terrifying. Just this person... like hunting you and the same thing with Slender, when you turn around and he's just there in the background looking out of beside a tree.
Yeah,
I thought it was brilliant.
That's why I couldn't, like, when the light went on outside my boat, that's why I couldn't look outside,
because you'd see something.
If I saw something just stand there looking at me, it doesn't matter what their intentions were, I would still be terrified.
Next question. Scariest film in the last 5 years, Chris?
I don't know. I thought The Conjuring was really scary. I know it was big budget and it was full of jump scares, but also it really got under my skin.
What about you, Gav? Anything in particular?
There's nothing that's really, really properly scared me, but like, and it's not really a horror film, but I watched like The Purge the other day, and like that had me on edge so much. Like, I just didn't enjoy it because I don't know why. Like, it's not a great film, and like, there's nothing great that happens in it. But for some reason, just this idea had me completely on edge the entire time.
It's a cool concept, like, isn't it?
It's a cool concept. Yeah.
It's interesting that the concept is the thing that survives from that film and its sequel. Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's the concept that is that film.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? Eden Lake. Eden Lake, I find Eden Lake disturbing because it is not fantasy. Like, no. Obviously, it's pushing a social ill to its actual horrific extreme and extrapolating horror from...
It's horrible, yeah.
But it's just that feeling of being... Because I'm a very non-confrontational person. So that scene at the beginning when they're just on that little shitty beach and that guy goes... Michael Fassbender, actually, goes over and tells the guys just like, oh, can you keep it down?
Everyone's been in that situation.
Yeah, where you just... Or you've been on a bus and there's some people and you're like, I really don't want to get involved with these people.
Yeah.
And the way it escalates so quickly, it's terrifying. And then it's got an amazing ending, which I won't ruin if people go seek it out. But the ending's fantastic, terrifying.
If you're going to go 10 years, I think the scariest film I've seen is Wreck. Wreck really frightened me. And I was with all the kind of hardcore Fright Fest
organisers
and critics and stuff. And we all came out of that going, wow, we've been scared. That's a film I haven't had in a long time, like properly terrifying.
And it's like, you know, we've got to the point where I think you'd be quite dismissive if found footage becomes a thing, but it just shows you, like, when done properly, it can be terrifying almost like anything else, because it really puts you into the film.
I really like, maybe not like scared, but I really like Ty West, like a couple of Ty West films.
Very classy films as well.
Yeah, like The Innkeepers is like, that's actually really, really scary.
Yeah, that's scary.
Like, for me, that's... has some of the best like horror dialogue ever, because it was like, for the first time ever, it felt like, oh, that's actually how people talk. Like, because I hate watching, like, the thing that I hate about like all the remakes when like Friday the 13th and that were getting remade, it was people talking in no way that you would ever talk like a human being. Like, that's what I really, really like that for.
That's a really classy film as well. It's a really patient film. Like, some people, you know, on the other hand, people think it's very slow, but it's a very patient film, I think, because really like it really goes bananas at the end.
Yeah,
just don't tell him it's a slow burner.
Not tell him that. Okay. Best Halloween costume you have ever had.
See, I'm afraid to say mine now because you said that you don't like that.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Mine isn't Halloween related.
I once made, when I was in like sixth form, the shower from Karate Kid.
Yeah. You made the shower?
Yeah, so you know he dressed up as a shower in Karate Kid, so like the skeleton man can't see him, so you can go to the dance and they can't beat him up. So basically, me and my dad built like a harness and a shower with like a head and like fake water coming down. And I went to this sort of like school dance as a shower.
Have you got pictures of this?
Yeah, I think
I have.
You
drop one in right now. What about you, Chris?
I dressed as Elliot from E.T. Made a cardboard cutout of E.T., put him in a little basket with bicycle handlebars. Aww. And then I wore a red hoodie and I kind of went around. It looked like I was on the bike with E.T. in the front.
That's awesome.
Had the hoodie up, like, and it's, that's all set at Halloween. So,
but what did you do with this? Like, I best actual quote unquote like proper Halloween costumes I had as a kid was like Grim Reaper. My mum did like amazing face paint on me, like glowed in the dark, and I had a scythe. But I didn't go trick or treating, so I used to like just go around my house, like stand in windows and like look out and just.
I think I ended up...
Well, I just didn't trick-or-treat, because mum's like, I was begging. So, but I really wanted to, like, do Halloween, so she would, like, dress me all up and, like, do this amazing face paint. I would just, like, go stand in the garden with a scythe. Yeah. But also, part of me was, like, really hoping, like, an elderly neighbour would look out and they'd just be like, all right, face glowing.
Scaring your neighbours.
Yeah.
I went to the Phoenix that night in the...
As a child.
Elliot. No, I wasn't a child. I was about 30. Any more?
Okay, this is the worst Halloween costume you've ever had.
Oh, I don't know. I've done stuff like last minute and like really rubbish ones. I dressed up as the cat bin lady. You know, the lady who put a cat in a bin once?
You have to carry a cat around and a bin.
Well, no, my girlfriend at the time, she dressed up. I made a bin, put her in it. Actually, that's pretty good.
That's actually good. Like doing an internet meme kind of like... the final one, do you have any funny stories around Halloween? Should we revisit that one, Chris?
Yeah.
Do you want a bit more prep?
I don't know.
I think we should probably go to transition to a quick reader feedback.
Yeah, why not? What we got? Who's up first?
I think it's me. I've never done this before, so you have to give me 2 seconds.
No worries.
So this is from Sebastian Bowyer. Bowyer. Though I've never done it before, this week I felt compelled to write in with my thoughts after your conversation about soundtracks in film and video gaming. For me, the musical score to a game or film was one of the most important parts of the experience. Dan mentioning Clint Mansell reminded me of the theme he wrote for Duncan Jones is probably the reason I consider it to be one of my favourite films. I found a very similar experience in gaming, easily my favourite ending to a game, the final moments of Mass Effect 2, which play out noticeably different depending on your actions in the story. I lent an even more dramatic ear thanks to the incredible suicide mission piece. I was wondering if you guys have any similar experiences.
I listen to Clint's Moon soundtrack almost every day because I like writing to it. Mm. So it's on my Spotify. When I got my headphones on, that's one of a track from that will be playing in my ears at one point or other. So yeah, I'm with your man on that one.
I suppose Chris and I discussed kind of a lot of our favourite scores last week and what they meant to us, but you weren't there, Gav. Is there any kind of like particular score in a movie, game or a scene where you think the two are kind of tied?
I think like my favourite film is Jaws, and I think that film is like the score. That's it. Like they, you know, they didn't have the reason they had built such an amazing score is because the shark was obviously they were having so many problems with it and stuff like that. So without you take the score away, that film doesn't even exist.
Yeah,
so
such a simple score as well.
Exactly. Like. Yeah, and I think that's what I really like about John Carpenter's stuff. I really thought like you know it was really interesting what you were saying last week about that, like the way they were, you know the Halloween score was put together. And yeah. Like that. Like
so, I'm very unmusical.
Yeah.
So when I hear people talk about like musical theory and how you can. Music's so abstract,
yeah.
But you can create intention through something that is so abstract. It's quite fascinating.
Stallone's on record, I think, as saying that 80% of the success of Rocky is the music.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think he's maybe doing the film a disservice a little, but it's not far off. That film would not be the same movie.
Inspirational, yeah.
That's what people remember about the film. Like if you say Rocky to someone will start singing Eye of the Tiger. If you say like Jaws to someone will instantly start doing it. Like we don't have that anymore. Like you know, you guys are touching on it last week. Like,
I couldn't tell you. All these Marvel films. I cannot hum you any of those theme tunes. I can't hum very well anyway. But I you know, Superman, Danny Elfman's Batman, you could.
Yeah, if push, I think I could probably do the X-Men one.
Yeah,
I'm
going to that.
Well, Star Wars and Superman with the big kind of scores from.
Yeah,
and I think Zimmer's known Batman theme is good. Like it's stirring, but
it works in the
yeah
movie.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of soundtrack emails as well. One from John Stewart who says, "Duck Hunt." Yes, listened to the podcast discussion on changing movie soundtracks and was screaming Donnie Darko in my head until you brought it up. That was me that brought it up. So. Thanks, John. It's my favourite movie of all time, but the director's cut is horrible. Changing the songs was a terrible decision and is really jarring. Avoid. Excellent advice, because I've been umming and ahhing about whether to ever watch that, because it's probably in my top 10. And that's a great decision, Ben, made for me. I will not be watching it.
Done.
I've got to have Killing Moon at the start of that movie.
Yeah, it doesn't work otherwise. It's mad.
No, and I did direct message to the director, Richard Kelly, asking his advice, but he never responded to me. I know you're a listener, so Rich, give me a shout. He won't. And this is from Pete in Pennsylvania, who I want to call Pennsylvania Pete.
Nice.
Yeah,
can I call you Pennsylvania Pete, please, Pete? He's listed his top 5 score soundtracks in both movies and games. Movies, I'll go from 5 to 1. Movies, Bram Stoker's Dracula, Vertigo, Halloween, Dread, and Lord of the Rings, the complete recordings.
Dread's amazing.
I can't remember. Is it kind of a Carpenter-esque?
Is it like ding, 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 ding? It's really full body.
I really need to see Dread again. I've not seen it since the cinema.
Dracula was cool, actually. I need to download some Dracula tracks. Mm. Lord of the Rings is obviously great. And then video games, 5 to 1. Golden Axe. Awesome to start off with the Golden Axe. Echo the Dolphin, Elder Scrolls 4, Streets of Rage, and Jet Set Radio.
Yeah, the Jet Set Radio thing is really, really good. When me and my sister were kids, we wrote lyrics to the Streets of Rage soundtrack. I really wish she kept them somewhere because like we listened to the soundtrack so much because we played the game so much. Like we wrote lyrics to it, so it was just like on the streets of rage, like to the main theme.
Sounds good.
It was not good.
We need to get a copy.
This is what I missed out on being an only child.
Me and my brother weren't doing that.
I don't think many people were.
No. So thank you for that, Pennsylvania Pete. Great choices.
I like the idea that you like performing family. It's good. Okay, so Harry says Duck Hunt. The X-Men films have made a huge impact on me and are beloved films of my childhood. And the theme tune from the X-Men films is, in my opinion, amazing. Having seen Days of Future Past this year, I was overwhelmed with a sense of nostalgia when the X-Men theme from the original trilogy played.
Yeah, I think that's what I can't really help it. It's not a great theme, but I did experience the exact same thing. Look, I remember going to see the first X-Men and loving it. And then when I went to see Days of Future Past with such low expectations, when that music comes in, I was like, oh, yeah, this, X-Men.
Yeah, because the thing, even not the best music, if it's got a hook and it ties, if you've cultivated a sense of nostalgia around it and have memories associated, music can really bring back like all those kind of more abstract things like smell and music can really bring back powerful memories very quickly.
Have you ever been to like one of the things they do in the Royal Albert Hall? I went to a John Williams one last year.
Oh, yeah.
And that was just
incredible. I went to a Danny Elfman, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like, they do a lot of live scores. Like they did Michael Giacchino's score to Star Trek Live.
Oh, awesome. Okay,
I'd love to see something like that.
But this was like, you just forget, like, a song would come on, it'd be like, you know, the beginning bars of the Home Alone thing, and I'm instantly a child again. Like,
yeah,
and it's
Christmas.
Christmas, like, straight away, like, it's amazing.
John Williams is pretty damn good, isn't he?
Genius. Is that it for reader feedback?
Oh, no, I've got one here. Oh. With the first trailer of Better Call Saul upon us, I was wondering what your thoughts on the upcoming show are. Will the show bring the same level, quality, and character development as Breaking Bad, or is it doomed to fail when compared to what may be the best TV series of all time? I don't think it's the best TV season of all time, you know. Like, I like Breaking Bad. It's all right.
A cult has developed around it.
Yeah. It was because it hit in a way where Netflix was just hitting and people were going insane for, like, box sets and stuff like that. And then there was so much of Breaking Bad already had happened. So when Netflix became big in this country, people were like, oh, there's this thing called Breaking Bad. And, like, sort of went crazy for it.
And it also became... It is excellent. But I think it's almost... It's not controversial to say it, so it's quite easy to say it. That makes sense. Like, you feel like you're on sure footing saying it. It's like a really solid choice to say is the best TV series. But also, I think Better Call Saul, if they've got anything about them, they'll make it a different type of show.
Definitely.
Because otherwise, that's not a good way to start your life as a TV show being compared to Breaking Bad.
I'm interested. You know, I'm not going to prejudge it. It's tough following the footsteps of that, but you know, Frasier's following the footsteps of Cheers and was as good, if not better. I think it will have a different voice because it's got a different showrunner.
Yeah.
So the guy who's overseeing it is the guy who the staff writer who created the character of Saul. So
that's his baby. There's a vested interest.
Yeah, he knows the character better than Vince Gilligan does. So I'm intrigued. Yeah. I mean, I don't feel like I need it in my life particularly, but
But well, I also trust Bob Odenkirk. Like, I don't think he doesn't do a lot of rubbish.
Yeah.
So I think that he wouldn't have done it unless he thought genuinely that there's something to do here.
Well, out of interest, Gav, because obviously you're new on the podcast. What is your favorite TV show? Like, so that like listeners can.
Sopranos definitely is my favorite ever TV show. The Wire close behind that, but I think Mad Men. Like Mad Men for me, like I'm just in love with that world and those characters. Mm. Like I don't know what I'm going to do when it ends. Like I'm gonna be
That's a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know what's gonna happen. Like I think I've watched Mad Men through more than I've watched any other
really
thing through. Yeah.
See, that's the thing. I don't think it's I really love Mad Men, but I feel no compulsion to ever rewatch an episode.
Yeah, I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
Very, very, very interesting. Final email is from David in Nottingham. He says, regarding the... we were talking a lot about reviews recently on IGN. Mm-hmm. Always controversial subject. Regarding the talk of masterpieces on the last podcast, because when something gets 10 on IGN, the epithet is masterpiece.
Okay.
You spoke about how many times you can change your opinion on whether a film is a 9 point something or a 10. Do you feel that more games get a 10 due to the amount of time reviewers spend with them, anything from 10 to 50 hours plus, and you might only get 3 hours in one review showing for a film? So he's saying, do you think it's easier to like say something's a masterpiece because you spend longer with it? I wouldn't think that's the case at all.
That you're tied to it a little bit.
Yeah, maybe. You're probably more heavily invested in it in that world. I don't know. I think 10 is, you know, it signifies perfection, and you can have something that's short and perfect. Yeah. Something that's long as perfect. Something could be short and like loose and baggy.
Perfect.
Have you?
What?
Huh?
No. What?
Brilliant.
Well, something like Journey, like that. You know, for me, that's an amazing game.
Yeah.
2 hours long.
Like, yeah.
And I would give Journey a 10.
Yeah, I'd definitely give Journey a 10. Yeah. And also at the same time, you can have something that's like 90-minute film that feels too long.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say, I'm definitely not going to love a 4-hour film more than a 90-minute film. More often than not. Yeah. You've got to be bloody good at 4 hours.
Yeah, you've got to justify that.
Yeah. Like, Interstellar was an interesting one this week, you know, 170 odd minutes.
Yeah. Talk about that next week.
You got to be good. You got to be solid. You got to be.
Yeah. Well, was it good?
Yeah, it was. I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah, I don't
know. Not a masterpiece. Mm.
It's an interesting sort of. It's an interesting point, like, yeah. You know, because you are tied to a game and, you know, you get a lot more time with it, but I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, sorry.
Cool. All right. Is that it for the reader feedback?
It is indeed.
Let's talk about what's out this week then. Let's kick off with the games, Daniel.
Loads of games every week now. So, big one that Gav's looking forward to is NBA Live 15.
I actually really am.
Are you all right, basketball fan?
Yeah.
Oh, I kind of said that in a very flippant way.
No.
Yeah, but you were telling me about 2K15 you like.
Yeah, 2K15. Like, I really like 2K15. And
NBA got a bit of a kicking last year because it's the first time EA brought it back and they got the license and it wasn't up to snuff.
Yeah, it's never going to be, is it? But I think this one, haven't they done the thing where they've put a story in it as well? Like, I really hope they have, I've just made that up.
They put a story in, you've got to go from your small village and find the Master Ball.
That's like when they did, like, Fight Night. Like, that was amazing because you were just, like, you're in prison and you had to, like, fight your way out of prison. Like, that's what all their games should be. They should have a story like that.
Mm.
I mean, they probably haven't. I've just made that up in my head, but there we are.
Walking Dead, the Telltale series is out on Halloween for next-gen consoles, PS4 awesome. And Xbox One.
It's worth playing in one hit like that as well.
Yeah, like, and also, like, if they're continuing to progress the game. Yeah. They're making more seasons, you might as well do it all on your next gen console, I guess. Have those saves carrying over and all that sort of malarkey. Lords of the Fallen was out earlier in the week. Reviews live on site. I think we got somewhere in the sevens. Good game. Getting kind of that kind of scores across the board.
Yeah, that's going to pass me by, that kind of game.
Yeah, like they're like heavily traded on the fact that it is a Dark Souls-like game, but I don't know. I don't think it's got
Dark Souls.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a lot of what reviews are saying. If you really like Dark Souls, you still got plenty of hours to play in that game. And then probably the big one this week is Sunset Overdrive, which we gave a 9 to, I think. Mm. Amazing. Lots of good scores for Sunset Overdrive. It's just like bonkers Xbox One, bright, colourful.
Yeah, I haven't played it since E3. And I have to admit, like, I sat down to play at E3 and I was completely underwhelmed. And everyone was talking about it.
It's like Jet Set Radio and it's like... It's
nothing like Jet Set Radio. Like, maybe that's why I didn't like, because I love Jet Set Radio. So I think people going, oh, it's like Jet Set Radio. It's like, it's not at all.
And I think if you think the Avengers are a bit smug, you might think Sunset Overdrive is a bit smug. It's like... It's a video game that knows it's a video game and insistently points out it's a video game every 2 seconds.
Yeah, but that's the thing, though. Like, this is the thing that if you point out, this is a bit that I did, where it's like they take the piss out of, like, oh, isn't it rubbish when games send you on little fetch quests? And you're like, yeah, it is rubbish. Get on a fetch quest. No, that you can't. Just because you don't acknowledge,
you can't have your cake and eat it.
Yeah,
you can't
just
do.
Just because you don't acknowledge something doesn't mean that you can then do it.
Yeah,
like that's just even more.
Come up with a better way of doing it.
Exactly, because you're just, you know, admitting that you can't think of a better way of doing it.
Yeah,
it's not. I mean, it's not for me. It's like it's very, very smug. I think like co-op and like multiplayer is going to be really, really good.
Yeah,
but I'm not going to touch that single player.
Yeah, so that's it. So it ended on a really upbeat note, though. Thanks. Yeah. Cheers, Gav.
Got movies though.
Some really good movies out. Well, one in particular.
Lots of scary movies this week.
Ghostbusters.
Ouija's out, which I won't be seeing. I was interested. They made
I can't believe there's not been a film called that. It's so good.
Yeah.
It's like John Carpenter when they made Halloween. He couldn't believe they've not made a film called Halloween yet. It's like, seriously?
Is Ouija about a brand name, though? It's a toy, isn't
Waddington's
it?
Waddington's made it.
So I think they had to get
the
rights.
The Ouija board as we know it today was a Waddington's board game.
Mm. Serious?
I'm pretty sure that's the case. I made that up.
So that was kind of being positioned as kind of a... an Insidious or a Conjuring, and then they didn't show it to anyone and there wasn't any footage out there, and then it's come out and it turns out it's just kind of a crappy teen horror. I'll probably see it when it comes on the telly, but yeah, it's got bad reviews across the board. Horns is out, which is quite good fun, although I recommend probably reading the book before you see the film. The book just works better in terms of the nastiness and also the emotion. It just works a lot better on the page than in the film. But it's all right. It's reasonably entertaining. Like you said, the Ghostbusters is getting a limited re-release. Will you be watching Ghostbusters again, Daniel?
Always watch it. Yeah. I've not seen it actually a long, long time. I wrote something about it a couple of months ago, and I realised it's been too long since I've seen Ghostbusters. Yeah,
I went to the, you know, Future Cinema did like a thing in the Troxy Cinema last year. I went to that. That was awesome because they just acted out loads of it, and then at the end there was a giant Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, and you could dance with him. So
that's have you good. Seen it in the cinema?
No.
Well, you have to go and do that.
You have to, man.
Okay.
And Nightcrawler, which Dan and I have both seen. Have you seen it? We really, really liked that film, didn't we, Dan?
I think it's excellent. I think it's
one of the best films of the year, I think.
It's the new Taxi Driver. It's Taxi Driver for a 21st century.
Taxi Driver Network. It's really nasty, and it's kind of a black comedy, thriller, horror, drama. It's not nice. You're not going to come out of it happy, but it's dark fun. So yeah, I thoroughly recommend that one.
So I think Ouija boards have existed for decades, but in the 1960s, the Wallerton Group produced the board as we know it today as a child's game, and it was sold widely in toy shops around the UK. After a lot of opposition from various religious groups, it was taken off the shelves.
Good.
The main reason for this opposition comes from some of the stories that children told about the devil communicating with them through the board.
Have you ever played with a Ouija board?
No, but it says it's still the best-selling board game in the world, second only to Monopoly.
Serious?
Yeah.
Have you ever played with a Ouija board?
No.
I did when I was a kid. And something weird happened. Like, it spelled out, and this is 100% true, it spelled out, why is Moro dead, right? Like, more or less spelled out, why is Moro dead, give or take a couple of letters. flash forward, like, 2 months down the line, there's a giant, like, train crash in South Wales, and the driver was like drinking and taking some kind of like medication, and his name was James something Morrow. Why is he dead? And then there was a big sort of inquiry about why this happened, and then it turned out that he'd been on these like tablets and shouldn't have been driving the train. And I foresaw that with my Ouija board.
Bloody hell.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a weird but
suitably grim.
Yeah.
On this podcasting Halloween special.
Well, thanks for listening and watching. I hope you all have a very happy Halloween. Let us know what you got up to. The email address as ever is ign_ukfeedback@ign.com. And yeah, thanks for watching and listening.
Cheers.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.